Hi, I'm Hanat Baba, host of Cross Currents. Did you know KALW is member-supported public radio? When you make a donation to KALW, you're financially supporting the programs you love, and you become a member of this station. We can't do shows like Cross Currents without the financial support of our listeners. You make it all possible. Become a member today with a gift at KALW.org. And from all of us, thank you.
KALW.
If you plant them adjacent to high pollution zones, they straight up just capture particulate pollution in their leaf matter.
Trees can do a lot of good, and not just for cleaner air.
You know, when students get dysregulated, have them go and take walks and touch leaves and water trees and the plants that are around the school.
Today, we go to San Francisco's Bayview to hear about the benefits of tree planting. Then, journalist Lauren Schiller's new book asks questions like, is feminism inclusive?
Ijoma says a lot of people feel that because they're feminists, they have some sort of head start in anti-racism. But feminists are no more guaranteed to be anti-racist than any other white American.
A conversation with fellow KALW show host Lauren Schiller and more. That's coming up. I'm Hanat Baba, and this is Cross Currents. San Francisco's Bayview Hunters Point neighborhood has some of the most polluted air and highest rates of asthma in the city. Making it greener could improve residents' physical and mental health while also making Bayview more resilient to climate change. But cultivating an urban forest can be complicated, as KALW's Mary Catherine O'Connor reports.
When you think of trees in San Francisco, you probably think of the Presidio or Golden Gate Park, the tree-lined streets of Pacific Heights, or the lush canopy over Folsom Street. But sunny Bayview Hunters Point, protected from the harsh Pacific wind, has an ideal climate for trees, as I learned from Marcos Major, an arborist and the director of the tree-planting nonprofit Climate Action Now.
I am a restoration ecologist and climate activist.
So, if it's such a great place for trees, then why is the Bayview one of the less forested parts of the city? Because of structural racism, meaning systemic racism, but also racism related literally to structures, houses.
The southeast part of San Francisco suffers from historically very polluted air quality, and those are because of choices of leadership, that the southeast is where industry is concentrated and where there's redlining.
Redlining was a post-depression practice linked to a government-backed mortgage program. Maps were color-coded to indicate which neighborhoods were, quote, desirable or, quote, hazardous. The latter were redlined. That was a racist policy because the criteria didn't just include the quality or market value of the homes, but also the racial mix of the residents. In redlined neighborhoods, few trees were planted. That didn't change for decades, in large part because of San Francisco's own policies. But we'll get to that later. Right now, Marcos and I have some Bayview strolling to do. He explains that trees can help clean the air.
If you plant them adjacent to high pollution zones, they straight up just capture particulate pollution in their leaf matter.
We come upon a corner lot with two large, mature shade trees.
They're on the south end of this house. Cost savings for this home for heating and cooling are significant.
Trees are like machines that can do a lot of heavy lifting, not just for public health, but for improving resilience to climate change. Next, I head up Newhall Street and down Bayview Street to a school where Marcos helped transform part of a playground into a garden classroom while also planting 38 new trees.
My name is Vidrell Franklin. I am the principal of Dr. Charles Drew Elementary School here in the Bayview neighborhood in San Francisco. I am a Bayview resident and a product of Bayview Schools.
We walk through an outdoor classroom filled with young, thriving trees. There are lots of tree stump seats, planters, and an area with deep divots in the dirt where students had been really digging in. She tells me the green schoolyard has helped ease the return to classrooms.
just the feeling of digging your hands in the soil, connecting with nature. You know, when students get dysregulated, have them go and take walks and touch leaves and water trees and the plants that are around the school.
As the trees at Charles Drew mature, they'll shade the schoolyard and filter pollutants. That's especially important because the Bayview has among the city's highest hospitalization rates due to asthma.
We had up here, and the kids would play up there.
Hi.
Just outside the school, I find city workers removing some freshly cut concrete. Older trees were causing the sidewalk to buckle, making it dangerous for pedestrians. So the school asked the city to replace and narrow the sidewalks, giving the trees more room to grow. And that brings us back to how San Francisco's own policies around tree ownership exacerbated the harms done by redlining in the Bayview. Historically, San Francisco made homeowners responsible for the cost of planting and maintaining trees in front of their homes. If owning a home was out of reach, so was owning a tree. Poor air quality and a lack of trees. It was a double whammy for Bayview residents, and environmental injustices that compounded each other. So, after San Francisco voters passed Proposition E in 2016, which put the costs of maintaining street trees on the city, it seemed like a great time to start planting more trees in the Bayview.
When we would go out and ask people if they'd want a tree, prior to 2016, a big concern was, how am I going to care for this and maintain it? I don't have the resources. I don't want to take on this responsibility.
That's Brian Weidenmeyer, executive director of Friends of the Urban Forest, a nonprofit that works with the city to plant and care for street trees. After Prop E passed, Friends of the Urban Forest, or FUF as it's often called, worked with community organizers to drum up interest in planting street trees in front of Bayview homes. But many respondents said, no thanks.
I think there's legitimate reasons why residents in the Bayview and other neighborhoods would not trust the city to properly care for or maintain a street tree once it's planted and is growing.
Residents had lots of concerns. What if the tree doesn't get maintained and dies? What if the tree basin becomes a magnet for the plentiful litter on the streets? And there's another reason residents said no. It has to do with parking.
Many homes throughout San Francisco have multiple cars per household and rely on illegal sidewalk parking to store those vehicles and don't want a tree where they're parking their car.
But he says that's an issue that's also tied, like redlining, to discrimination.
Some of the same reasons that have led to environmental injustices like air pollution, toxic waste being present in a neighborhood, those planning decisions also mean that a neighborhood doesn't have access to great transit.
So FUF was kind of stuck in its efforts to grow the Bayview's tree canopy until they looked more closely at residents' feedback. Turns out they did want trees, just not necessarily in front of their homes. So FUF got creative and held an Adopt-a-Yard Tree event. Bayview residents were offered trees that they could plant themselves in their backyards. At that event, I meet Shipra Kayan and her daughter Isha as they got ready to take a Santa Rosa plum tree home. I joined them there the next morning.
My name is Shipra. You're in our backyard in Bayview. And we moved here 4.5 years ago. There were a few ornamental trees. We had this lemon tree. We planted a bunch of fruit trees. We have a fig, a passion fruit vine.
Shipra uncovers some earthworms and calls her daughter Isha to come look.
Oh, I see earthworms. Do you see them?
I do.
Wow, they're so fat. Yeah, the rains have been so good for us, you know? They've been so good. Hey, Isha, do you want to see some earthworms?
But Isha is more interested in the oxalis flower she's been pulling. She's weaving the stems together.
Mama, I made a braid for you.
You made a braid for me?
Shipra gently pulls the plum tree from the bucket. She's looking for the rootstock, which needs to be flush with the ground. there isn't much of a root ball, and she's a bit concerned it won't stand on its own. But as she packs the loose soil around the young tree, it seems to take to its new home quite well.
So I'm going to mulch it, and then I'm going to fill up the bucket with water and just leave it here.
Bayview residents have been subjected to decades of toxic and radioactive materials dumped at Hunter's Point and a century plus of industrial pollution. It will take a lot more than planting trees to address these environmental injustices. But the benefits that these trees provide in terms of capturing pollutants, absorbing rainwater, and creating shade as the climate continues to warm should pay dividends for decades to come. In San Francisco, I'm Mary Catherine O'Connor for Cross Currents.
Thanks, MC. Friends of the Urban Forest recently opened their Adopt a Yard tree program to San Francisco residents outside Bayview. We'll have more information at klw.org/crosscurrents. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Lauren Schiller is an award-winning radio host and journalist. Her show Inflection Point was born here at KALW, and it went national to great success. It features conversations about women who are building their power in the modern world. And for Women's History Month, we've been airing excerpts all this month on Tuesday mornings and evenings here on KALW. Now Lauren is out with a new book called It's a Good Day to Change the World, and it features 30 women who she's interviewed on her show. Lauren joined me, along with producer Hadley Dynack, to talk about womanhood today, the inflection point we're at right now, and how they stay hopeful.
All of these women that I interview just hang out with me on my shoulder every day, and they are whispering in my ear now and then. And, you know, there's that kind of old adage in radio when you're putting together a story to remember what you remember. And so there were certainly some that bubbled to the top. But what we wanted to do is make sure, A, that the book and the stories that we included were still relevant for today, because some of the interviews do go back a little bit of a ways. Some of them are even from 2015, 2016. And how diverse a group of people that it would be, so that we were looking at people from different parts of the country, different backgrounds, different ethnicities, different races, different ages even. The women in the book range in age from 15 to now almost 102. And one of them is a young activist.
Is that Betty Reed Soskin?
You got it.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And for each person in the book, we kind of read a little bit of their story. We get that. Then we get tools they suggest for creating change. And then there's advice to keep going, which is like self-care, right? Like, what do you do when things are just looking bleak, which is the times we're in right now, if I can say that, right? There's like, some people said self-reflect, some people said make art. And I wanted to read the response by author Ijeoma Oluo. You know, it's funny, I get this self-care question a lot. But at the end of the day, I'm still going to be Black. Either I write about it or I live it. There's no break. I live in a society where racism hits me all the time. That's been my whole life. So I'm not good at self-care. Like many people who don't have the luxury of time or a guaranteed escape from these things, I never know when racism is going to hit me. And so I wanted to ask you about this idea of not everybody has the privilege to take a break.
It's so important to recognize that the experience of living is different for everyone. And secondly, because the keep going advice that we've included in the book really isn't about manicures and massages and taking a break. Ijeoma says a lot of people feel that because they're feminists, they have some sort of head start in anti-racism. But feminists are no more guaranteed to be anti-racist than any other white American. And for us, we're viewing a feminist future as one that is equal just and full of joy, and a place where everyone can thrive and everyone is included and everyone benefits, not just the people at the top. And obviously, no one person can understand another person's experience, their lived experience, but we can certainly be respectful of it and aware of it and be working together to make a difference. And that's a number of what the other pieces of Keep Going advice include, is about solidarity and being advocates and moving beyond just this idea of being an ally into actually an accomplice. Ashanti Golar, actually, from Emerge America, says that in the book.
What are you seeing in today's generation of girls that inspires you and gives you hope despite all the bad news for the women's movement and feminism right now?
There's something in them that I'm seeing, at least in my daughters, that they're the COVID generation, they're the Trump generation. They've been let down so much that that spark feels like it's there. It just needs like to be ignited.
I think that's a beautiful way to put it. I mean, both Lauren and I have daughters as well. Each of us has two. Both of them are in high school. One is in high school and one is in college. So yeah, we're seeing that journey happen in real time in our lives. And I think even the difference, my kids are 4 years apart. Lauren's, yours are three?
Three and a half.
Three and a half, yeah.
Mine are 3 years apart. Do we all have kids the same age?
I think so. High school, one in high school, one in college.
One is a junior in high school, one is a sophomore in college. Yeah, girls.
So I don't know if this has been your experience, but in my family, you know, my older daughter missed a lot of things, you know, 2020, high school graduation, all of the first year of college, but had developed enough that I think could see how the work that she had done and the things that she was interested in were things that she could continue to move the needle on despite all of the issues going on in the world, and felt more, I think, strength and hope.
That was Lauren Schiller and Hadley Dynack. Their book is It's a Good Day to Change the World. You can hear excerpts from Lauren's show Tuesdays this month in the mornings and evenings here on KALW. And we talked about a lot more, including our daughters. Hear our whole conversation at KALW.org. This is Cross Currents. I'm Henat Baba. Up next, a story from the Uncuffed team at Solano State Prison. If the doctors said you'd never walk again, would you believe them? Keith Paul Jones said no. Jones told Uncuffed producer Anthony Ivey the story of how his world was torn apart and rebuilt. And a note, Ivy wants listeners to know that including descriptions of violence in this story is not intended to promote or glorify violence.
Hey, check me out. You here with Anthony Stick Talk Ivy, where we stick to the truth and talk about the truth. Here on Uncuffed, when you had the freedom to tell your story.
I told myself time and time again, this time I'm gonna win. My name is Keith Paul Jones. I'm from Riverside, and I'm 61 years old.
So give me a little background about getting in the drug selling business.
It was from a young age. I come from a big family. There's 16 of us, and I'm the baby boy. I got five brothers. One was in the service, but the others was Black Panthers. And they had drugs around me all my life. I seen big bags of drugs, and I used to steal the weed and smoke it. And I got to selling, I would sneak the weed and make me bags and sell joints.
So let's get into this incident.
Right.
What happened?
I had a pretty cool dope, so I was buying like 3-4 ounces at a time. And I'm driving. My wife is on the passenger side, and I'm pulling out, and I'm coming down the street. Just hit the corner, coming up the block, it's a dude that I know. He stopped. I stopped. He wanted a $40 pay. So I get it out the bag and tell my wife, to go. She said, no, straight out, don't do it.
She felt something.
Yeah, she said, don't do it. I said, man, get out the car and go and take care of that. And she said, no. I jump out the car and I go to the passenger window and I say, all right, I got my whole sack in my hand. And I said, what you want, $40 worth here? I'm getting him out the bag. I hand him two, but he hit my hand and hit the gas at the same time. I jumps in the window. But he came to do what he did because he had a gun in the car also. So when I jump in the window and I place myself in the car like I came up on the block with it.
You Wild Wild West right now, hopping in that window.
Yeah, because I never been robbed before either. And my thinking back then, my thing was, you're going to have to kill me. And he was going down the street driving wild, digging. He digging for his gun. Because when he got around the corner, he stopped and pulled it up. Said, get out. I'm not finna turn my back to that. When he pulled the gun up, I reached for it. And he jumped back and bent the gun over and pop, he hit me in my arm. I hit him in the shoulder and I locked him up against the door, the car door.
You ever think that you was gonna die at this point when he's shooting?
No. When I'm in the street, I'm not scared like that. I know I'm gonna die one day. I don't know when, but I know that's gonna happen. That's how I think. That's my thinking. You know what I'm saying? And that keeps me calm in situations like that. But I was still paralyzed. The doctor told me that I had a 50-50 chance. He believed that I wouldn't be able to walk again.
So when you heard this, what kind of thoughts was going through your mind?
I knew it wasn't the truth. Anytime some that deep happened to you, God gonna have be inside you. He gonna have that voice. You'll know.
I can't really imagine like how it is if somebody told me that, you know, I was partially paralyzed. So after he told you that, what happened after that? What effects did you go through?
You know, I had doubt after about a year and a half. I couldn't even wiggle my toes. My wife used to bathe me. Take me to the bathroom, bathe me, I get mad at her.
So you said she was wiping your ass?
Oh, washing me up like a baby.
Did this bring any depression to you?
Yes. At times, you get very depressed.
What was the thoughts that was going through your head when you was depressed?
I might not be able to walk no more. And I really get depressed when I can't do nothing to my wife to satisfy her sexually.
I know that had to weigh on you a lot.
Yeah, I couldn't do nothing. We tried, and it wouldn't nothing happen. You know what I'm saying? So,
tell me, what kind of things did y'all do to get your rehab up and started?
Me and my wife, she went to all the things with me. So what we did, we would get up and get in the wheelchair, and I'd put her in the wheelchair, and I'd try to push with one leg. When I got my feelings back, then my toes wiggled.
All right, earlier, man, you said as soon as you got shot and they told you that, you knew that you was going to get to walk again. But later, you told me that sometimes you had doubts in your mind that you wasn't gonna walk again.
Okay, now I can tell you like this, you know, I can only keep it 100 like you said in the beginning. I'm a God-fearing man, but there come times in your life also when tragic happened to you that you're gonna lose a little bit of favor. I straddle the fence. And now, you know, I only conclusion you can come to is good Lord trying to tell you, you know, to do the right thing.
Our prison training programs are supported by the California Arts Council and the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. Producers fact-check content to the best of their ability, and all content is approved by an information officer. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.